because beware, the G-Men are coming to town. It's a battle of NFC division leaders, Giants, Seahawks, 1 o'clock Sunday. We'll have the action here. Our guest is our Seattle Pulse, ESPN 710 in the city. Online, check out his work. Use 710sports.com on Twitter. The handle is at TheBGustafson. Brandon Gustafson, how are you doing this second day of September?
Oh, I'm doing great. Yeah, hard to believe that we are finally in December of one of the weirdest years that has ever existed.
Yeah, it's an understatement. Before we get to the gridiron, a Mariner thought or two. You know, we talked preseason and in-season. The expectations were limited. It's a rebuild. A lot of reason, I think, to be encouraged for 2021. I thought Marco Gonzalez was outstanding as the ace. And now, you know, once the word gets out that a guy like Blake Snell of Tampa is available, everybody starts thinking, well, is he coming here? Is he coming here? He's a Seattle guy. Any buzz about his heading to the Great Northwest and how nicely he'd fit at the top of that rotation?
I think any team would love to have a guy like Blake Snell, you know, in the first two or three slots in your rotation. Big left-hander, throws hard, four-plus pitches. It's just a matter of cost for the Mariners or for any team. He's cost-controllable. He has 3 years left on his contract with just under $40 million. He's a 2018 Cy Young Award winner. Part of the buzz for potentially moving him is due to that Game 6 in the World Series when Kevin Cash decided to pull him after giving up that hit in the fifth inning. And as we all saw, that backfired when he went to the bullpen and the Rays lost the game in the series. I'm not sure how interested the Mariners would be just given what it would likely cost to get a guy like Blake Snell. I think they're kind of a year away from making that sort of splash move. And to get somebody like Snell with, like I said, 3 years left, he's 27 years old, the Rays would be silly not to ask for a guy like a Jared Kelnick or a Julio Rodriguez who are top 15, top 20 prospects in all of baseball. And if you're the Mariners, you have zero reason to trade for somebody like Snell if you have to give up somebody like that, because with 2021, with the minor league season not having happened in 2020, you know, you're probably not competing this year either. You're hoping for that upswing. You know, you're hoping for that second half of the year to kind of carry over into 2022. But as far as getting somebody for 3 years left starting in 2021, it might not make a lot of sense right now.
Yeah, that, what you said, makes sense more than the move. you know, when we last spoke, we were talking about Kyle Lewis, the center fielder, deserving walkaway winner, the rookie of the year. And you tossed around a couple of other names, and you just mentioned two. But what are some of the guys who might be poised at a lower level who you think it wouldn't be unreasonable that they might make the jump and at least contend for a spot with the big club?
Yeah, Jared Kelnick is going to be the first guy that comes up, top prospect, and I think that if 2020 was a regular year with a full 162-game season, with some sort of normal minor league season, I think he would have been with the club by August. Logan Gilbert, he was the first-round pick in 2018, right, big right-handed pitcher. He's another guy. He and Kelnick both ended 2019 in Double-A. Somebody else that's kind of interesting to watch would be Taylor Trammell. I think he's typically ranked around their fifth or sixth ranked prospect. He was the big piece that came over in that trade deadline deal with San Diego Padres. He's another top 100 prospect. He's an outfielder, left-handed hitter. He draws a lot of comparisons to both Carl Crawford and Curtis Granderson. Speedy guys with kind of some sneaky pop who can man the corner outfield spots. He could play center field if needed. Those are definitely some guys to keep an eye on, and somebody else who might be able to make even a faster jump than expected is George Kirby. He was the 2019 first-round pick. The dude just throws a ton of strikes. His velocity is a lot better than I think people give him credit for. He's somebody that I could see ending up in the rotation or maybe a bullpen spot in August or September as well.
Always love a commentary on the Grandy Man, no question about that. Talking with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle to the Seahawks. Kind of a roller coaster ride of a season. The nail biter wins early, the 5-0 start, the injuries 6-3. Then I guess you could say the healing began. The pickup of Carlos Dunlap to rush the passer. Would I be accurate in saying, I mean, you just throw that all into a mixer, pull it out and say, 8-3, first place, 3 seed, Jets, Giants, and Washington up next. I don't know if it's reasonable to think they could be in much better position right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned the injuries. They were battered, and even right now they're still missing some key guys. You were missing Shaquille Griffin, a Pro Bowl cornerback, your top coverage guy, for 4 games. You're missing Chris Carson, 2-time 1,000-yard rusher. You're missing him for that length of time. Quentin Dunbar, one of your big offseason acquisitions at cornerback, he was banged up, and now he's on injured reserve. Jamal Adams, you shipped 2 first-round picks off to the New York Jets to get him. He misses 4 games with the groin injury. For them to be in this spot, you have to be feeling pretty happy about that, especially given that 5-game stretch where they went 2-3, they split with the Cardinals, they beat a really banged-up 49ers team, but they lost to the Rams and they lost to the Bills as well. The running game was off. Teams just kind of went right after Russell Wilson. They were rushing him more. He's getting hit a lot. But as you mentioned, these upcoming 3 games and even this one that they just beat with Philadelphia, yeah, you're looking at entering Week 16 against the Rams, which is the game that will probably decide first place in the NFC West. The Seahawks are probably going to be 11-3 entering that game, and that has to be feeling pretty good for Seattle.
Monday, you wrote about DK Metcalf, and he might be one of those guys who makes notes. You passed on him during the draft, and the Eagles in the second round picked J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford, who has 12 total catches in 2 years. But if you look at DK in the performance in the playoffs against Philly last year, this past Monday, accurate to say he's successfully using that snub to literally torture the Eagles.
Yeah, drafting J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was a big old swing and a miss when you consider what DK Metcalf has done in his 27 career games. It's just been incredible to watch. But yeah, DK is definitely somebody who I think that draft slide, you know, after that combine performance, he was considered maybe the first or second receiver taken in the 2019 draft. He slides to the 64th pick. I think that might have been a good thing for him. I think that that just built that chip even bigger on his shoulder. And then when you have your quarterback as Russell Wilson, who's basically overlooked in college and in the recruiting process, and then even when he got drafted to the Seahawks in his first few years, I mean, those are two guys with huge, huge chips on their shoulders. And yeah, I don't know if DK specifically has it out for the Eagles. I don't know if they were looking at him really, really tough in that draft process and then decided on taking Arcega-Whiteside, but these last 2 games, the playoff game and then on Monday night, just between those 2 games alone, he has over 300 receiving yards. That's just ridiculous, especially when you consider Arcega-Whiteside has like 200 yards for his entire career.
It's wild. You know, you mentioned the injuries and, of course, running back. Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde missed time. Rashad Penny still's yet to see the field, and I think what Pete Carroll said, while the duet of Hyde and Carson didn't exactly put up Barry Sanders numbers on Monday, just kind of the threat of having those guys out there kind of made its impact because the Eagle defense knew they had to account for their top two guys.
Yeah, it's just a matter of keeping opposing defenses honest, and that was something that we saw in that Buffalo game. And in that Rams game, they just didn't have that. They had DJ Dallas. They had Alex Collins. Those guys just aren't in the same league as somebody like a Chris Carson or a Carlos Hyde. Both of those guys rushed for over 1,000 yards this year. When you go back to the Arizona game that they won on Thursday night, you know, we've seen Carlos Hyde out there. It changed the whole complexion of that offense. You have to, like I said, if you're an opposing defense, that keeps you honest a little bit. And getting Carson back for this game specifically was great because Carlos Hyde got bottled up. He had more touches, but he got next to nothing on the ground. And the Eagles have a really, really tough front four. Fletcher Cox is one of the most underrated defensive tackles in the league. The guy's just an absolute monster against the run in the pass. And when you see Chris Carson run compared to even somebody who's really good like Carlos Hyde, he's just different. And we saw it on that 16-yard touchdown run. Takes outside. He's a lot faster than people give him credit for at his size. And, you know, he's kind of stopped around the 2 or 3 yard line. He just busted through. He just wanted it more. And having that combined with Russell Wilson, and you have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett catching passes, that's a scary offense. I don't think that's somebody that any defense really wants to face come January.
A few final thoughts for Brandon, ESPN 710 in Seattle. Let's get to the defense, also decimated by injuries. You mentioned Bruce Irvin brought into Russ the passer, done for the year. Benson Mayola goes down. The opposition passer was getting no heat, so they add Carlos Dunlap. Guys get healthy. You wrote about it. You know, seven of the points they gave up after their best game were on that crazy Hail Mary, but man, you got to be pleased with the way that pass rush is coming on, specifically how they got after Wentz.
Yeah, Wentz was, he's had a rough go this year, and Monday night really didn't help him out too much. He got sacked six times, got hit 12 more times, and the dude just looked lost. But yeah, the pass rush has really come on since Carlos Dunlap has come on board. His first game was that game against the Bills where they sacked Josh Allen seven times. Combined with that game to now, the Seahawks have 19 sacks, and all of a sudden, a pass rush, and that was considered the weakest link of this team all offseason. It was a huge problem last year. They only had 28 sacks all of last year. They have 31 now. They're actually tied for seventh in the league in sacks, and a big reason for that is Carlos Dunlap coming on and taking attention away from opposing offensive linemen, so that way guys like Jaron Reed and Puna Ford and blitzers like Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner can get after the quarterback. And I think that it makes everything easier in the secondary. Guys aren't having to hold their spots as long. They don't have to kind of place as soft as they typically have because they're worried about keeping everything in front of them because they actually have guys that can go and get after the quarterback.
Another area, you mentioned the injuries, the secondary. Jamal Adams now back a third game. Shaquille Griffin returned after missing, I think, four. There was the big fourth down pick by Quandre Diggs on that ridiculous decision by Doug Peterson. But overall, what have the coaches and guys and, you know, your observation said about, I guess, the upgrade in recent weeks on the back end?
Yeah, well, in fairness to Doug Peterson, Quandre Diggs was wide open in the end zone. Carson Wentz hit him right in the chest. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. But yeah, the secondary's been improving, and somebody that we haven't really talked a whole lot about is Trey Flowers. Since he's been inserted into the starting lineup with Shaquille Griffin being out and now Quentin Dunbar on IR, he's played awesome. That game against the Cardinals, I think he only gave up 50 yards or so to DeAndre Hopkins, and DeAndre Hopkins is top two, top three receiver in the NFL. Trey Flowers gets a hard time from Seahawks fans for some reason, but that pairing of him and Shaquille Griffin in this last game was great. I think Trey Flowers, between the three of Shaquille Griffin, Quentin Dunbar, and Flowers, I think he's been their best cornerback this year so far, but they didn't really bring in Jamal Adams to do a whole lot in terms of pass coverage. They brought him in to kind of be a roamer, to beat up guys over the middle and rush the passer, but having Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin back there with Quandre Diggs with this improved pass rush, yeah, this defense is looking a lot better. The end-of-the-year numbers are going to be bad because of the start of the year, but they're not going to be nearly as bad as people thought they were once the end-of-the-year rolls around.
And lastly, I mean, when you think of sub-500 division-winning teams making noise, probably a familiar ring to Seattle fans. I mean, the first Pete Carroll team in 2010 won the Week West, had the Beast Mode game to bounce the then-Super Bowl champ Saints. So, safe to say, this franchise with the 4-7 Giants coming to town, even with Colt McCoy, are probably like, you know what? We've seen this show before. We're not going to take anything for granted.
Yes, and like you said, the first year Pete Carroll was here in Seattle, 7-9, beat the Saints in the wild card round, and then gave a pretty good Bears team a good run for their money in the divisional round before Greg Olsen, of all people, ended up, I think he caught two touchdowns and had over 100, 120 yards or something like that. And Pete actually talked a little bit about that today. He knows not to overlook somebody like the Giants, and I think that whichever team ends up getting the NFC East winner in the playoffs, it's the same thing. You're going to get their best shot, and there's a reason why they're in the playoffs, even if it is a weak division. They still won their division. You know, that's just kind of the way that the cards fall. But it's going to be interesting to see if Daniel Jones can get back and play. It sounds like Colt McCoy is going to be the guy, and you kind of know what Colt McCoy is at this point. And yeah, that's just a battered Giants backfield. Saquon Barkley got out right away with the ACL, and now Daniel Jones has the hamstring. But they've still got a pretty good array of weapons with Slayton and Shepard and Evan Ingram. So the Seahawks secondary is going to have a good challenge at hand, keeping those guys at bay.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game, and of course, we'll have it here. You'll be wired in up there. Folks, always top-notch information, insight, and analysis. He's Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle online. It is 710sports.com on Twitter at the B Gustafson. Brandon, I really appreciate your time. Terrific stuff as always. Be well and definitely look forward to catching up again soon.
Sounds good. Take care, Steve.
All right, take it easy. Great stuff.